it seems, to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? I hope that bakery life is treating you well this week. I hope if you're working in front of the oven a lot, you got a fan or something. Keep that air moving. Keep your legs cool as best you can. In the north part of the world, we are getting into the hot phase of the year. And let me tell you, I'm feeling it. Working in front of the convection ovens at the coffee shop where I work, I can't imagine the days of the big deck ovens with the steam injection that doesn't always stay in the oven and the lack of airflow. I hope you're able to get some fresh air from time to time and are staying hydrated. Let's stay hydrated. Today on the show, I have a really fun talk. Oh my goodness. I'm talking to Stefan Spicknell from Cotton Rake Bakery in Glasgow, Scotland. Yes. Cotton Rake is one of the places that Cindy and I went to with our son, Ben, when we were up visiting Ben last summer. He took us there and it was great. It was so great. We went again, went a second time and finally get a chance to talk with Stefan. And it's a wonderful conversation. So we're going to have that in a couple of minutes. But before then, I want to share a couple of stories with you. Two firsts that happened to me in this past week. One was an extremely good first. One was a not so good first. And so let's see, the good one first, let's do that. On the weekend, this past weekend, was the James Bay Spot Prawn Festival brought to us by my favorite seafood restaurant called Finest at Sea. Good fish and chips and a fish market to boot. And all the fish in the shop are from come off their boats as they go up and down the island fishing. And it's just remarkable stuff. And so they had the Spot Prawn Festival. It's the second annual, but it's the first time I had the spot prawns. And I've never had them. And it's sort of the local thing every spring. It's like, oh, live spot prawns. They're really good. And so I had some, and they were delicious. Let me tell you, Cindy doesn't like shrimp and prawns or any of that. So I went by myself at the start to have them. And then she joined me later and we walked around the festival. But they're not cheap. Shrimps may be small, but they are expensive. But anyways, I got my six spot prawns, and these are like the whole beast with, you know, antennas and heads and tails and the whole bit. And they're grilled up and they got this special Creole butter. And I made such a mess. I got, you know, butter juice on my glasses and stuff, but I didn't care. They were delicious. So darn good. And so I tucked into those at like 11 in the morning and enjoyed every minute with them. It was great fun and a real treat. It's going to be a year before I have them again, but I really enjoyed it. And it was also good because I ate them while I was eating them. It was guilt-free. Half an hour later, the protesters from PETA came by and were explaining to everybody through a megaphone how this was, may as well call this the murder festival, and we're kind of a bunch of murderers. How can you eat this while you've got a dog on a leash and that kind of thing? And they're not wrong. I'm going to say that they're not wrong, but I'm probably going to do it again. And I'm going to try and be a better person, but they were really, really tasty. And I'm sure if I only eat once a year, it's going to be okay. I don't know that this is the kind of logic that's going to save the planet, but if I don't eat them for another year and then I have them at the festival next year, then I think I'm going to be okay. And my apologies to the PETA folks, because like I say, they're not wrong. And yet they were really, really tasty. Okay. And then the second first of the week, which isn't a really a good first, is yesterday at Union Pacific, the coffee shop where I work. First time I ever had to throw an entire batch of scones in the garbage. That's something. Ugh. Boy, oh boy. Like I've mixed some bad ones in the time and I've mixed some really, really good ones, but I never had to pitch them. But we had a bit of a system screw up at the shop, and the jury is out on who made the error or if multiple errors were made, but I'm here to tell you, with you as my witness, that that bowl of dry mix that I mixed cheese scones in said cheese on the side on a tiny little piece of masking tape and didn't say sweet. But at the end of the day, I ended up mixing cheese and onion scones in a dry batch of, in a sweet dry mix instead of a savory dry mix. Ugh, not good. We baked one just to make sure. So like, really? We can't sell these? They look really good. No, they taste awful. There's something about adding cups and cups of sugar to cheese and onions that just make it all kind of run together and be bland and icky. But it's too bad. And, you know, we're going to talk with Stefan coming up here in a bit about systems. And it sounds like he's got really good systems at his bakery because he has to, because there's a lot of people and a lot of moving parts and they're making a lot of stuff. I'm afraid we don't always have very consistent systems at the shop where I'm at now. Or at least we kind of maybe worry about the wrong stuff. Now, I'm not saying anybody explicitly worries about the cost of masking tape, but we sure use small pieces, like maybe the size of my thumbnail, and you're going to put a small piece of tape on a massive bowl and then take a Sharpie marker and write either sweet with lots of E's or cheese with lots of E's. It all looks the same to me, to this old guy, when you're pulling it out the next morning. And like I say, I swear to God, it said cheese, but I don't know, maybe it did say sweet. Maybe I screwed up. Maybe is this what gaslighting is in a way, like where if you say it enough times, you convince yourself that you really were the one that messed up when, I don't know, it doesn't matter who messed up. At the end of the day, the scones went in the bin, all because we're not spending a lot of money on tape. I threw out a lot of rolls of tape worth of product yesterday, and that's sad. Not happy about that one. Like I say, with these kind of system things, if you leave these systems problems at we figured out who was the person that made the mistake, then you're not really solving a systems problem. The systems problem is write in great big letters, or you know, cheese gets the orange tape and not the white tape, or however you're going to do it. But like, make it obvious to someone across the street what the heck this is, and we'll all be better. Okay, on to the talk. You know, I just listened to this talk again before recording this introduction with Stefan Spicknell from Cotton Rake Bakery in Glasgow. This is so much fun. You're going to love this talk. There's so many things that I want to talk about, but I don't want to spoil it for you. So I'm going to share this talk with you. Give it a really good listen. Sit with what Stefan's talking about. And then we'll meet up at the end and we can talk some more, okay? Here we go. It's Stefan Spicknell from Cotton Rake Bakery on, get the load of this. Don't you want this to be your street? He is on the Great Western Road in Glasgow, Scotland.
I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts over the last few days, and yeah, it's been a pleasure listening, actually, the last few days. It's
cool.
Yeah, it's nice. It's bakery talk and all that. And, it's quite fascinating, some of the stories and some of the podcasts. It's really interesting from my point of view as well. Being an owner, kind of baker, there always seems to be a story behind a baker, right? There's always some kind of emotion, some kind of decision to be made, some there's a bit of romantic that's in there somewhere as well, and every story is, there's always a bit of passion thrown in there, so it's very interesting.
Yeah for sure. Well, I think I've only talked to one person that I can think of that it's like, why did you get into this? Well, because it's the family business, you know, or maybe two, right? It's like there's always a journey to get to this, which is kind of cool.
It is. And there's a lot of people on a lot of journeys, and it kind of always ends up with your stomach, doesn't it? Fulfilling butter, sugar, pastry. It's a way to somebody's heart, and you tend to end up finding yourself in a in a bakery situation, which is great. It's great for the industry. I think it certainly shows, you know, I think there's so much creativity in bakeries and baking in general, and you know, you don't need that background, you don't need that kind of tuition from an early age. You can find your way, and as long as you're passionate and you're prepared to put in the hours and the effort and the hard work, you get it. And I think the bakery industry, in a sense, is flourishing because of the input of people that have changed their minds on what they want to do, changed their industries, changed their direction, and become bakers, in a sense. It's a good industry to be in.
It is. Yeah, I agree with you there. I was actually at your place. We went a couple of times when we were out in Glasgow last summer.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's kind of how I figured out to reach out to you, because my son's up in Glasgow and he's going to school up there. And we went to visit last July, I believe. And he lives in, Pollockshaw's kind of area, sort of south, right?
Yeah, south side, yeah.
Yeah. But we went up to the botanical gardens once with him and toured around. And then, you know, and because like we're bakery people, he said, okay, you know, we're going to go down the road here, and stopped in at your place. It was pretty late in the day. So it was kind of, we got what we could, you know, and then, and then Cindy and I came back for lunch a couple of days later, actually. And I still remember like having a baguette sandwich out on the little tables just out around the corner kind of thing.
Bless you. Yeah. You should have introduced yourself.
Oh, I'm a shy guy though.
So am I. I'm with you on that one. I'm the same, but, that's nice. Yeah. He's studying here, is he?
Yeah. Yeah. He's studying to be a physiotherapist, and, so he's going to grad school at one of the colleges downtown. So,
amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. He's in his second year and he's loving Glasgow. Like he really is. Like, he got in with the Scottish national lacrosse team as they're volunteering as their physio. Right. So he's
brilliant.
He's out to Largs once a month to the national center out there and stuff. And yeah.
Brilliant. A bit of fresh air.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Fresh air by the sea. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Amazing. It's such a wonderful city. It really is. It's, you know, and I'm sure we all talk about our hometowns and our home cities with, you know, only good things to say, but Glasgow seems to have this kind of pull on people. Mm-hmm. The amount of people you meet that have been here for a year to study, a year to work, or 2 years to study, generally find themselves still here in 20 years. I mean, you're talking to somebody that did that himself. I moved to Glasgow for what was 4 weeks before I went off to Australia to help a friend out who had his last month on a lease of his flat in Pollock Shores, actually, and didn't leave. That was 22 years ago, and I've been here ever since. I've been in and out of the city on and off working, but this has been my home really for the last 20 odd years. It's a great city, a lot of green space, and mm-hmm. people are very honest and polite. And you know, at this moment in time, it's probably the best standard of kind of food and hospitality that it's ever been. It really is a kind of booming little city for food ventures, which is great. Great for us, you know, and people aren't shy of enjoying themselves and wanting to spend money on a good sourdough or eat out in a good restaurant. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, we really enjoyed it. we had a phenomenally good time, and I'm hopeful that we can sneak up there again before he's done. I think the NHS has him for a year after he graduates, or I think that's kind of sort of how it works, I guess. So we might have another shot to make it out to see him. So that's good.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And by then we will hopefully have our new cafe open, so we'll have somewhere inside to sit.
Yeah. Oh, but that's all right. I have a lot of respect for the tiny shops that are putting out the good stuff, though. Like it really looked like it was humming in the background. You know,
it is. It's got a. It's I don't know how one word to describe that shop. It's constant, you know. Yeah. It is constant, and I always have this fear. And the minute you mentioned there, we came in at the end of the day, and there's nothing left. It's kind of that persona is put on somebody. You know, for me, between 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning, that bakery is just at its utmost. And after 9 o'clock, everything's just kind of downhill in a sense until you get to the sandwiches. You know, you. When you see people in the industry that have come in your shop, you obviously want the shop to look its best, but also you need to be selling the product. So there's a good side to coming at the end of the day. There's nothing left, but there's also, it's a bizarre little shop. It's full of energy. It's a busy environment for the team, and we have such a wonderful group of people with us. The team in the shop are absolutely fantastic, and they're nonstop from 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
with the bakers in the background as well, you know, going from 6 till 5 o'clock now. So it's a tight squeeze. I mean, you would have saw the space. It's very small. There's a rhythm to it. Mm-hmm. You have to get your timings right, which is a kind of pressure on them on a daily basis. But I think a little bit of pressure is kind of needed in workspace in the right manner, in the right format. So yeah, it's a good shop.
Yeah. Well, when it works well, or when the posture is, it's like, well, we're dancing this dance together, and at the end of it is all this great product at the other end. It's fun, you know. Like I'm working at a little coffee shop now, and I'm used to having like my bakery and, you know, a 10-foot bench to work at with maybe like two other people in the 10 feet, and now I've got I've probably got 4 feet to work with. And somebody's always behind me or reaching down underneath to get something, you know, and it took me a while, but it's like, I kind of enjoy it now, you know, you get used to the rhythms and you can move before you, and somebody has to even say anything. I'm starting to get my peripheral vision again, where I can step out of the way and there you go and keep on.
Got it. You've got the working. Rhythm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's funny you say that. We're designing and trying to build the kitchen this week for the new cafe, and mm-hmm. we're down to talking 100 millimeters here and 50 millimeters there.
Yep.
But you know, come service time, that 100 millimeters is going to be so important for that kind of rhythm, for us to find our feet in the rhythm and the working space and working environment of us all, to make it comfortable, but also kind of, there needs to be a rhythm. And we've certainly, I think, found the rhythm over the last kind of 5 or 6 years in that little shop. It is a busy little environment, constant, and it's open as well. So you're on show in a sense on a daily basis, and it's great. I couldn't be prouder of the shop and the team we've got in there. They're a fantastic bunch of people. And sometimes I wish I probably spent maybe more time now on the floor and in the shop, but I've kind of feel like maybe I've done my time in a sense in that environment. When I was in there on a kind of full-time basis, there was actually only two of us in there. So, you know, we opened that shop with two front of house and two bakers, and we're now growing to kind of 8 on a shift. So it's certainly grown in, mm-hmm. in the last few years, which shows it's kind of popularity and shows the commitment of the local community as well, which is supported by immensely. It's a fantastic little place. It really is.
Well, and so how did you get into the craft and into this, like to get to the point where you're opening up Cotton Rake?
Well, it's been a journey. It's been a journey. And that was the enjoyable thing over the last few days, the last week, listening to your podcast, listening to the journeys people are taking. And my mind is very similar, that there's a story behind it. I worked for maybe kind of 18, 20 years as a chef. So my background is as a chef. I worked in some very good restaurants, kind of 1-2 Michelin star restaurants, and got to a point around 2010 where I was burnt out in a sense. I would just got to a point where it was, you know, I've missed a lot. Working these hours, working these times, dedicating myself to other people's restaurants or hotels that, you know, worked in. And I decided to take a break. And I just, honestly, I won't lie. I I went down to my locker one night, got changed, and just entered my locker and walked out the front door and never went back. It was either that, or if I, you know, you could think about these things for way too long, and I just needed to make the decision and just go. And I kind of said to myself, that's the last service I'm ever going to do. And I went away, and luckily enough, a friend of a friend got me a job in a coffee shop making sandwiches. And, you know, it was 6-7 hour shifts, 5 days a week. It was absolute bliss, absolute bliss. And from that led to opening up what was starting off. An opportunity was given to me to start to provide a lunch for a university conference. My friend was a lecturer at the Glasgow University, and he wanted a lunch doing, but he didn't want to use the university caterers. So I put together things and produced this lunch for him on a Wednesday afternoon. And by Friday afternoon, I'd taken maybe 10 phone calls for people trying to book more lunches. And it was like, okay, this might happen. I mean, there's a huge story behind, you know, obviously being in a position where we didn't have any equipment, didn't have any money. We didn't, you know, I borrowed, I think, £140, I think it was, of my father many years ago, just to buy cutlery and crockery, because we had to supply that as well. And one led to two led to three. Before you know it, we were doing maybe 6 or 7 of the rooms within the university. So it started from there, and we maintained it. And I ended up getting a little kind of service, little kitchen in a shop on a street called Highland Street in Partick. And it was a really small, tiny shop. And we had a big shutter on the front that we shut down. And I just had a bench in it with a refrigeration, and made my lunches in there from started at 4 in the morning, delivered them by 9 o'clock in the morning. And that was me kind of job done. And then unfortunately a volcano erupted in Iceland.
Oh,
and
right. Yeah.
You remember that? I think that was 2010 maybe, was it? And we had all these bookings in the space. So I'd moved into a kitchen. I took on a lease. I took on rent. So I started to have overhead. So it was becoming an actual little business. And we had all these bookings from the university. Volcano erupted. No flights came into Glasgow. Everything got cancelled. We had no deposits on anything. So it was just like, actually, this business no longer exists. And it was thinking, what do I do? One, I've got all this produce in the shop. Two, there's no income coming in. And I mean, we'd been in the shop about a year, and we just opened up the shutter of the front of the shop, and it just let a bit of light in, and we went, we could probably do something here. So I baked maybe 6 or 7 things, put them on a shelf, had a little fridge in there, kind of cut open the front of the fridge. And we just opened the doors on a Thursday. And that was really as simple as it can be. And the aim was to open on a Friday, Saturday, but by the end of it, we were open kind of four days a week in a sense. And then we started employing another baker, then a front of house. So it just gradually grew from that. I kind of shut myself in there for the first kind of month and just got myself back into a rhythm of trying to work on a pastry section, because the experience with me was being that guy that was always put on the pastry if the pastry chef was off, because you could kind of do the section, you could have the section. So it was just this most simple of things. And we literally put this thing together and opened the doors, and it just kind of snowballed from there. What was great was they bought the farmer's market outside the shop as well, on the park. Through from there, that was, it was great. It was, you know, at that point, we just had our first child, and I kind of, you know, I struggled in Glasgow at the time to find somewhere that, you know, I could get a croissant or something in that sense, freshly baked at your door. There'd always been that kind of passion of pastries and patisserie and that kind of classic French, you know, patisserie shops and things. So I kind of, kind of threw it together, and it started to work, and we just grew from there. And it was a really good grounding for me, because being a chef, you are totally, you're generally working in a kitchen that probably doesn't have a window, could be in a basement. The only interaction, the nearest interaction you have with customers is the person on the pass on the other side. So you have no kind of understanding. And I was well aware of that. And I wasn't afraid to say I have no kind of understanding of it. So we made sure it was all open. I made sure it was all open so I could see people. I could see the interaction. I could see customers. They could complain to me. They could congratulate me. They could do whatever they want. But I just needed to see how it worked. And yeah, it was such an amazing grounding, this little shop. It really was. And limited for space with bread. So at that point, we weren't making sourdough or bread at all. It was really just based around sweets and pastry items that I was quite comfortable with, that I could get to a decent standard that I was confident enough would sell. And it wasn't until we moved into the new bakery we're in now, the one you visited, that we started with the sourdough and the croissants. But to get to that shop was a testing time for us on a personal level. So with our first bakery, we'd had it for about a year. And I kind of, even thinking about my time as a chef and how it came to an end, I was thinking to myself, maybe I wasn't feeling right. Maybe I wasn't 100% fit and healthy, maybe mentally fine. But my body was just telling me that I wasn't able to do these kind of hours that I was doing. And after a year of working for myself, because if you're prepared to work 16, 18 hour shifts for other people, then what are you, you know, you can do that for yourself. And that was easy for me because it's head down and it's, you kind of get on with it. So I put in the hours, but I was really struggling physically. And it transpired a trip to a hospital, and a long story to it, but I had a wonderful doctor who basically spotted something within my heart that wasn't good. And within 10 days, I was having open heart surgery.
Oh my goodness.
Had two holes in my heart. Yeah. So we lost the business, you know, like that. We had 10 days to shut it down, and we put it in storage. I was made aware of kind of the situation I found myself in. And, you know, you've just had your first child. It's, again, you're in a predicament. And so we shut that shop down. And while kind of rehabilitation was in order, we found the shop, which is Great Western Road, where you visit it. And we've been there ever since, and started to grow the business and become what I would say, you know, is a bakery, is in a sense a real bakery. The shop before, I hate the word pop-up shop. I don't really like it, but that's what we were. And it was a really good testing ground for me to think about how we approach being a bakery, you know, how we go about it. But the move into 497 Great Western Road was we had to get better. We had to improve. We added croissants, pastries. We added savory items, and then we added the sourdough bread. And that unit, the shop you went into, up until 3-4 years ago, we were making everything in that shop, from sourdough to pastries. So we had a retired approver in there. We had the two-deck oven that's there. We had a large marble bench, and we just ran a system of staggered starts. And we just, I called it kind of a through and through, where we would just go from morning, and then the bread would come out at certain times of the day. And yeah, we you know, it's just gone from there to a point where we kind of outgrow the actual kitchen space, to a point where we had to go and find, to keep up with the levels and the demand, it was either we say, actually, no, this is who we are, this is how many pieces of bread we make, or do we want to, a life choice in a sense, for us to make a living out of this, we need to be selling more products. And to keep the standard and a consistency, we need bigger oven, we need bigger space, we need a bigger wooden bench. So we then went out and found a production kitchen, development kitchen, where we now have another team of bakers in that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Developing the bread and developing pastries. And yeah, so suddenly we've gone from opening this shop, 9 years ago with what was me with two holes in my heart and recovering from open heart surgery, to having, I think we've got 10 full-time bakers now.
Oh my goodness.
Just that little shot.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And so you're doing your production in a different facility, but it's all being sold through that shop on Great Western Road.
We only do two things in the production kitchen. That is our croissant dough.
Yeah.
Our laminated croissant dough, which gives us our croissants, pan of chocolates, almond croissants, a Danish pastry, and our bread. That's the only two things we do in the production kitchen. And then that comes in at two points of the day, sometimes three points. So we have a first bake that arrives at 8 o'clock in the morning. Then we have a second bake that arrives at 11 o'clock, which is our fresh baguette. So everything still arrives warm, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, my whole vision and passion was to say, we're going to do this differently. I do not want a production kitchen. I do not want a bigger environment. I want everything baked on this street. And we managed it for 4.5 years. But as stubborn as I am, it was obvious that if we wanted to improve, if we wanted to experiment more, if we wanted to have more produce, if we wanted to grow the business, we needed to have a separate kitchen. And again, that started with two bakers in it, and now it's up to five full-time bakers in it. It's been a slow process, but you know, it sometimes pains me that I'm not sticking to the original idea of baking everything on the street. But we just had to make that decision and for the business to grow. And also, what's pleasing is that the actual consistency of our sourdough, the consistency of our pastries, the development of them over the past 3 or 4 years wouldn't have happened if we didn't have this environment to work in.
Yeah. Because I wonder if there's a limit to the, like, you know, you get a lot of goodness out of working in a really tight space, but they're kind of, you hit an upper end in terms of quality as well, right? Because you're juggling so many things and you know, and everything's got to hit those two decks and, you know, and you get it how like a little slip early in the day can cause a big problem by the end of the day. And, you know, it gets tougher to manage.
Yeah, it was in the space when we were producing everything in the space, we had kind of a 7-minute rule. If you'd missed that 7-minute slot, then everything had just gone to pot. There were days when, you know, you would be pulling dough off the wall. It was insane. You know, it was crazy. I mean, we had a huge 50 kilo mixer in that space as well.
Oh my gosh.
On top of a Hobart, a retarder, a dough sheeter, a marble bench. It was absolutely insane. But again, we never jeopardized the consistency or the quality of the product. I think that was, you know, we could have kind of scraped corners. We could have, you know, replaced a lot of sourdough with yeasted breads, or, you know, we could have done things differently, but we kind of kept to the original starting point and the reasoning of opening the shop. But I think if we would have moved into this, you know, production development kitchen, if we would have moved into that and we wouldn't have seen an improvement, I think I maybe wouldn't be here today. But the improvement has been vast. The bakers we have down there at the moment are just phenomenal people, amazing people, amazing group of people. No, not one of us has been a baker from an original baker. They've all came into the industry. David, our head baker at the moment down in the shop, in the production kitchen, he was a chef again, tired, exhausted, wanted a different scene, wanted to spend an evening out with his friends, started in the shop with us. 3 years later, he's moved into the production kitchen. 2 years on, he's running the shop. His bread is phenomenal. He's backed up by a wonderful group of people. We've got a hugely talented kind of pastry chef in there as well on our croissants and pastry doughs. From my point of view, it was the right choice when you see what these guys are doing, what they're producing on a daily basis. But it also gives the bakery itself on the street, the shop, it gives the bakers in there, because everything you see in that shop is baked in that shop bar those two products. And so they have to go through a rhythm again. They're on a schedule, everything from everything in the fridge, from eclairs to macarons to shoe buns to almond tarts, brownies, carrot cakes, everything is done in that shop on a daily basis. So yeah, we've still got that. You've still got the environment.
Yeah. And for people coming in, you've got the spirit of, I'm coming into a working bakery. I'm not coming into a boutique, you know, like, cause that's the feeling we got when we went in. It's like, yeah, like we are buying our food where the action is, you know, and that's what Cindy and I love, you know, and so, yeah, like it's awesome. Well, it's got to speak to the demand of the people in the neighborhood and in that community, that it's like, there are the people there supporting you that can support that many bakers. Like that's excellent.
There's many reasons why we're still producing what we're producing. There's reason, you know, we seem to be getting busier and busier and busier. And each year we've done more than last year. Each month we're slightly, you know, it shocks me. I'm so proud and I'm so pleased. We must have created some kind of environment, but you can have a great team. We've got an amazing team of bakers, an amazing team of front of house staff, you know, a management system in there. We've got unbelievable people, but you're kind of nothing if you don't have the support of the local community.
Yeah. And
for me, it has always been about listening to them. You know, people in Glasgow are very honest, and sometimes they can be too honest. But if you didn't have that, you would just be carried away. And before you knew it, you know, you have got this boutique, white tiled, you know, 1,000-pound lanterns hanging from the wall. You know, there is a slight element of a kind of a spit and sawdust about the shop, but it would be nothing without the community around us. And there is an amazing community. And if you were a businessman looking at the shop and thinking, this is where we want to produce a bakery, you've got everything. We've got two high schools, we've got two primary schools, we've got a commuter belt, we've got a tube station, we've got bus stops, we've got the Botanic Gardens 400 yards up the road. So you've got all these things around you that can create a business. But unless you take into consideration what is on your doorstep, when you open those doors, you're opening it to the people in the flats across from you, people above you, to the left of you, to the right of you. You know, this is the foundation of everything that we're going to do. And the community is such an amazing bunch of people. They really are. And, you know, we work extremely hard to make sure the shop is open and functioning on a daily basis. And, you know, we couldn't be more proud and we couldn't be more appreciative of the local environment around us. A wonderful bunch of people and a great community spirit. Yeah, it was the right choice for me to, you know, I'd been trying to get hold of that shop for a long time. And when I saw it, I just knew it was the place to be, because not thinking actually about the business side of things, you know, I did a lot of research into the shop prior, because it was a bakery before. It was a kind of an old Scottish bakery company, a family business, a chain. In their heyday, I think they probably had 100 bakeries scattered about the city. When we decided after a year prior to having heart surgery that, you know, we want to look for a bigger space, I always had in mind this shop. I looked at it, and so I would go and sit outside the shop and I would count the people passing. I would go at structured times of the day to see how many people are passing the shop. It got to a point where I was going into the shop, the bakery, and I was filming in the bakery without them knowing. And I was taking photos of the produce in the shop on the shelves. I would then go away. I would go back midday, and then I'd go back at 4 o'clock, film, take photos, and I would go and count how many things these guys had sold.
Oh, wow.
I did that for about 2 months, and I just put things together. You could see how obvious it was. They weren't selling anything. They weren't doing anything. I remember going back in one time and they'd stripped like half the counter out and replaced it with seats, and they were selling like fried sausage rolls and bacon rolls. And I was thinking to myself, these guys are you know, plucking at strings here. There's something. So I just carried on and took a lot of photos, counted a lot of food, and was just about to approach the company that owned it and say, look, I don't mean to be rude, but this is what I've been doing over the last 4 weeks. And I think you should give me your shop, basically. A chance meeting with somebody, we were looking at a shop across the road from it. And I said to him, I'm sorry, but it's just a bit too small. He says, well, how big are you looking for? I said, it needs to be two or three times the size of this. And he says, I'm not allowed to advertise it, but I'm under the understanding that that shop across the road is coming up for rent. So I was just like, that's the shop I want. You know, let's not advertise, just give it me. And 2 days later, I met the owners of the shop and they said, would you take the lease off my hand? And I said, I'll take it right now. And 2 days later, I took the lease on and they left the shop and we refitted the shop. And that's where it's been ever since. So we did our research into the shop quite severely, quite weird, maybe. But yeah, I just knew the positioning of it, the environment that surrounds it. I just thought it really needs to be used.
But I think that's brilliant what you did. Like, it really is. Like, just from the point of view of, you know, you're counting the people and it's like, look at all the people going by, but nothing selling. Like what's going on here? You know? And, and like you said, you know, we used to have back in Saskatchewan, there was the first bakery that I wanted to buy. And when we wanted to get into it, it was right in our neighborhood and same kind of thing. There was a high school nearby and all the kids would come looking for something at lunchtime. They, you know, they'd all walk over and they were always super busy at lunch and they do like little pizza buns and stuff for them. And that location didn't work out for us, but I always thought it's a ready-made market here. You know, there's folks wanting food. They're coming by looking for food. And how do you how could it not work? But then you see a situation where it's not working, you know?
Yes.
And it's like, wow.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There was certainly the people. I would recommend it for anybody in a sense to take that method. Maybe it was a bit overkill and I just had a feeling. I just thought this could really work and I just didn't think it was viable. But it turns out also on the flip side of that is that when you enter a lease with somebody, when it's not your property, there's got to be good communication with your landlord, the shop owner. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful lady who owns the shop and she's been unbelievably supportive. When COVID hit, she was kind of the first person on the phone, you know, which was just amazing for us. And like she said last week, we've never let her down and she's done the same. So, you know, you could have had a really bad landlord, you could have had a bad owner and things wouldn't be the way they are, but it's been an amazing relationship we've got with her, which is so important when you put everything, you know, bakery equipment isn't cheap.
Yep.
You know, bakery equipment and everything to go with it is expensive. So there's a huge investment in that. Whether you're in a basement or you're in a shop front or a shopping mall, you've got to fit it out with equipment. And equipment is not cheap. It's a big investment. And you can invest in all of this equipment, put it in an environment, in a building, and your landlord's a total arsehole. Mm-hmm. You know? But we've been very, very lucky. She's an amazing woman. And that's added to it, you know, that's added to the environment that you go into. It helps. There's, you know, we don't have any issues with our landlord, which is amazing.
Yeah. But I'm really curious. So when you first opened in that location, after, you know, there had been a bakery in there, do you remember like what was some of the early responses from folks? Because what you would have been doing would have been completely different from what was there. Was it sort of well received, or did you get folks pining for the olden days? Or
one of our first customers leant over the counter and threw a punch at me. which was quite funny, which I took with a pinch of salt, because we'd stopped selling this. So this bakery used to sell this red sauce. It was strawberry sauce, and it was basically just pure sugar with red food coloring in. And they used to sell these strawberry tarts with this sauce piled all over it. And this guy used to apparently come in and had been coming in for many years. And he used to buy this sauce and just, you know, can the bottle of this sauce. And when I told him we were no longer this bakery and we were no longer selling the sauce, that was him. He went Fruit Loop and started trying to jump the counter, flinging punches at me left, right, and center. So we went from that extreme to actually people coming in and taking away the product and saying, you know, this is great. This is great. Yeah. And the most important thing for me was that we were open 7 days a week. That was the issue with it as well. You know, I think sometimes you can look at bakeries today and they're so, the essence of a bakery, if you go back all these years and you go back in history, it's about supplying local people, your local environment with breads on a daily basis. And I think sometimes we get into an environment people can build or open bakeries, cafes where maybe actually they might be a bit too cool and they only do 4 days a week, 5 days a week. For us, it was really important to make sure this shop was open 7 days a week. We opened at this time every day of the week. We didn't decide we'd open at 8 on a Monday, then maybe by Tuesday, you know, Tuesday we might open at 8:30 or Wednesday we're behind, so we're open at 9. It's 8 o'clock every morning. The shop is open. And with that consistency became, I think the local community started to have a bit of belief in us that, you know, we were there for them and we could be relied upon to be open. Glasgow has a very funny thing where, you know, they're a very late beginning in a sense on a weekend, especially like a Sunday. I had this beautiful vision of Sundays being extremely busy, full of fresh pastries. And honestly, nobody walked through the door till 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, okay. And you've just got this shop full of pastries and you're like, and then by the time we get to midday, 1 o'clock, nobody wants a pan of chocolate anymore. So you're just left with all this stuff. So Sundays were very tricky and it got to a point about, you know, 2 months in, it was like, should we really be opening on a Sunday? And it was like, no, we've got to stick with this. We have to stick with this. And it was quite funny because about a month of being open, you could really sense this change of people coming into the shop. And it was very European. Okay. It's a lot of French, a lot of Spanish, a lot of Portuguese, a lot of, you know, Japanese, Chinese. There was a lot of Glaswegians weren't awake, but we were slowly appealing to the like Europeans in a sense that were awake and were looking for a fresh croissant. And, you know, again, we stood by it and said, although we lost money, I'm sure, for the first 3 or 4 months, we just stuck with it and said, no, we will carry on. We'll be open on a Sunday morning and we'll just stick with it. And sure enough, Sunday mornings now are 8 o'clock in the morning. We're queued out the door kind of thing. So perseverance pays. And we could have easily just said, actually, let's reduce our hours or let's shut completely. But
yeah,
kind of we stuck with it. We took the hit and stuck to our laurels in a sense and carried on. But it was well received. It took time. And I think as we grew, the confidence in the local community grew that we would be there and we'd be offering an honest product, to be honest. Mm-hmm. We didn't shy away from the fact that we're new to this game. We made mistakes. If things didn't come out right, we sold them for 20% of the price. You know, some days you could walk in there on a Sunday when we were new to it and you could pick up a croissant for 50p, you know, that kind of thing. If it wasn't good enough, then
yeah,
we would give it away. Same with the bread, you know. I don't know, how many days did we go just giving the bread away? Because it just wasn't, I think we hit about 7 or 8 days of just literally giving the bread, putting it in a bag, and anybody wants it, take it, because it wasn't where it needed to be. Mm-hmm. But now, yeah, it's a learning curve. I think when you come into the industry, you've got to be prepared to take the kind of knocks, and not everything's going to be perfect. And when you're dealing with sourdough, you're dealing with natural leavens, you're dealing with yeast and lots of butter. There's a part of it you can't control, and you'll know this as a baker. There's certain things that you can't control, and some days are great, some days aren't. You try and be as consistent as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And you're just kind of like, well, I get to play again tomorrow. So let's try again. You know, it's like,
learn.
You got to have that attitude for sure.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it is. I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only baker that's just had absolute nightmares of days. And still, we still have it today. You know, we still have these days. We, yeah, you know, somebody forgot to put salt in the rye bread 3 weeks ago. You know, it's, and you've just sold 60 loaves.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's, what do you do? You know, when they're doing it every day for 4 years, and then that day, we're humans.
Yeah.
We make mistakes. It's, you can be frustrated by it, but I've done it myself. I've done it myself on many occasions. Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those. It's one of those. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, boy. Well, I just needed to reflect back that the one of the things that I admire by all of these stories is that you're willing to take the time it needs to really test an experiment and test it out, right? Like even like I'm going to sit outside this shop for a month and see how it's going, not like a sample size of like one day, or I went on a Sunday afternoon and it was busy, so therefore it's always busy, you know. The time to experiment in those early days to say like, yeah, we're going to figure this out as we go and stick with it, you know, sticking with Sundays long enough to see if it's really going to change or not, you know, that's important. And I know I'll speak for myself. I tend to cut those experiments short, like too short, and instead of, you know, going longer and really, really understanding what's happening.
Yeah. I don't know whether maybe sometimes it's easy to cut it short, isn't it? I suppose it's maybe that kind of format, even being a parent sometimes, I've thought there's certain shortcuts as a parent I think I've taken that probably I shouldn't have, you know, that kind of, to get them from A to B or just as being a father, I suppose. It is difficult, but I think if you're passionate about something, I think if you've got to have a certain kind of stubbornness as well about your thinking. You know, I've never, you know, I'm originally from a small market town in the Midlands. You know, no airs and graces. We're surrounded by fields and on one side and factories on the other. There's, you know, it's, I certainly wasn't given anything as a child. You know, I've never had an inheritance or investment or mum and dad's money or anything to play with. Everything we've done has been on our own back. And it's, you know, we've been at a point where, you know, I don't know your experience in baking or in opening bakeries, but we've gone down to the wire on several occasions and taken that risk. And, you know, it could have gone wrong. It really could have gone wrong. And in today's world, things can snowball so quickly with the amount of people that we've got employed. You've got to make that sensible decision. And I think if you've got the research behind you and you've got an attitude of this is going to work and you're prepared to work for it and you're prepared to get your head down, take as much advice as you can. Some of it you're going to appreciate, some of it you're not. Listen to what the people are saying that are coming in and buying the produce. Some of it's good, because with every good review, there's two bad. So for me, I've got a very simple mind, and I don't mind saying that. I'm not the most educated of people. I have, you know, I generally don't use internet, WhatsApp, social media, never been on it. I've not even looked at a website for 6 years. I don't even know that we've got one.
That's why you're so healthy. Okay. It's been
But I was extremely unhealthy, so something had to change. You know?
Yeah.
I was literally dying, so I had to change something. But I think it's very important. And listening to some of your earlier podcasts, and you know, I think it was it Mark? Is it Mark in the, or Paul Young? Is it the Real Bread campaign?
Yeah. Chris Young.
Chris Young. That's it. Chris Young. He mentions that little thing about WhatsApp and about Instagram and things like that. And it's important, I think, if you start a bakery or if you start in this industry, that you have to focus on what you want and not be carried away or led astray or to another side or be be overcome by what other people are doing. You've got this idea, you've got this passion. Follow that rather than following what is being advertised in front of you on a daily basis, because you know you can't walk down the street without seeing somebody with a phone in the face. You look in the bakery now, there's people, you know, will sit down and take photos of, you know, and for me, I'm appreciative that I don't have any connection with that whatsoever. And you know, I remember employing a young lady, Stacy, in our first bakery, and she was so savvy with this kind of, she was so on the ball. She works for bands and she promotes bands. So she does a lot of promotion. She knows how to get something from here to there through social media, through that. And she was amazing. And she's an amazing woman. And she introduced me to the Instagram and Facebook and all this kind of stuff. And when she wasn't there, it was like, you need to do this. And it's just like, but I remember picking it up and looking, and then you start seeing it, your feed, and then there's other things that bakers are doing. You're thinking, why is mine not looking like that? Why am I not doing that? Why? Before you know it, you're gone. And you know, all that time you spent sitting outside a shop that you really don't want to be sitting outside of, looking really weird and taking photos of people's feet and cakes and shops, all that has just gone to the wayside because you've now gone on this journey through social media at what this bakery in Toronto is doing, or this bakery in London, or you know, before you know it, you've literally lifted the tartine up and tried to replicate it in your own shop. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it I think you can get lost. And for me, I have no presence or any internet ability in that sense, and I'm not proud of it. I've got an 11-year-old who turns on the sets me up with doing this, but it's important that you have to think about, you're going on a journey, you're entering an industry that can be very cruel, that is very cutthroat. If you know, this isn't a product that you can leave on, it's not a bottle of perfume that you can make and put on a shelf for 6 months. This is something that needs to go. You need to produce it, make it, produce it, advertise it, and sell it. Fundamental basics of a bakery, it needs to be sold. And yeah, I think if you enroll yourself in what other people are doing, you'd get lost. So I put that down to a lot of, again, why I did, when you said to me that, why have you not looked at your website? Why do you not go on Instagram? All these things. I said, well, the front of our shop opens up onto what is the West End. That's the priority. Mm-hmm. People in this vicinity, in this environment, in this community, that's where our focus should be. Not that one loaf of bread that looks really beautiful, or that croissant that's been cut in half and you've got the holes and you've got the rims and you've got that hand holding it. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's probably the only decent one they've baked, and the other 30 are total shite, you know. But it's a perception, isn't it? There's a perception. And it's interesting, but it's for me, it's so important that you filter in everything that's said to you or about your business, about your product. And you have to filter and listen and take the positives, take the negatives and learn from them and filter in the things that you think are, you know, again, it's opinion, isn't it? It really is. It's opinion. It's a difficult one. But for me, it's about focusing on what's in front of us and on a daily basis. And the most important thing about our shop and the most important thing about our day is we have a meeting every morning. The shop doesn't open. Everyone stops 10 to 7:45 in the morning and has a coffee. And we go, that's our time to have a coffee. And that's our time where we go back through every single produce on the shop. And some people say, but we've done it yesterday. It's the same stuff today. It's tomorrow. It doesn't matter, because there's always something from yesterday that needs to be discussed today. Because if we don't discuss it this morning, what happened yesterday repeats itself today and we'll go on for the rest of the week. This is your handover. Somebody is in charge of the iPad that has the handover sheet on. And that person then has that voice to go through every single thing again. Any additives, any changes, any requirements, anything that was said yesterday, anything that was negative, you know, anything, Yeah, it's so important, communication. But communication within your team and within the shop that you're in is, for me, so important. And what's going on out there or in the world of whatever social media or whatever advertising we can do, it's about the now. It really has to be about the now.
Well, and that concept, it's just what's enough, right? The people on your team and the people that you serve, that's enough. You know, like there you go. And I think it's a real privilege or it's a responsibility and a privilege to be able to focus on those people, you know, and to focus on your team and to focus on the folks in your community and say, yeah, that's enough. And if you're not selling in Hong Kong right now, that's okay, because you're in Glasgow, right? You know, it's like, you know, it's like, I hear you're number six in Denmark. It's like, how does that help? What's that got to do with anything?
Yeah, you got 10,000 followers on your social media. Well, there's 300 people outside the shop, you know.
That's exactly right. And if there was in any world that was the same people, well, then we could have a different conversation, but it never is.
Yeah.
You know, it never is. Yeah.
No, it is. It's funny, isn't it? I think we can, it's funny. It's been a journey, and it's a journey we hope to continue. That's the thing as well with our new space. It's such a different, I mean, you'll know yourself with speaking to people and doing this podcast, it's not the easiest industry to be in today. I woke up this morning, put on the radio, you know, kids are getting up, news comes on, food increased this month, 14.3%.
Yeah.
Food costs.
Yep.
And you're just like, that's the start of my day. That's, you know, that's at the back of your head. It's, you know, we come through COVID and now we've got the energy problems, we've got food problems, we've got Brexit, we've got everything is a problem, and the bakery industry is we've been hit hard like a lot of industries, and you know, I'm not just saying about Britain, I'm sure in America, you know, worldwide, Europe, we're all the same.
Oh, it's the same here. You know, we got our supplier came into the shop last week, and just because we sell a lot of salads, and just like, you know, fair warning, they're 10 weeks behind in lettuce production, wherever they get the lettuce, probably from California, you know, and it's just like, so like lettuce is going to go through the roof within 2 weeks. And they were like grateful for the notice, but it's like, you know, I don't know, we can't be selling so many salads at this price, cause our costs are going to double. So yeah, it's so hard, but I guess that's the thing, right? So you can take the stuff, the big issues and so, okay, bring it down into, you know, this corner on the Great Western Road and this community in the West End of Glasgow and say, okay, what's it mean for us? And let's do something for us and try and filter out the rest as best you can.
Yeah. It's tricky. I mean, we are all, the thing is that we're not alone. I think everyone is feeling that with the cost of produce. Yeah. It is difficult, but I think we'll be fine. Again, you know, I think you have to prioritize. You look at your products, you look at the way we're working, we look at the manufacturing power that we have in the sense of, you know, how can we do that differently? Can we do anything differently? Can we source anything from anywhere else? And I would like to, you know, I'd like to, it's like I said to my head baker yesterday, we haven't spent so much time. We've spent more time in the last 2 weeks looking at suppliers, looking at produce, looking at alternatives. We've done that in more in the last 2 weeks than we've done in the last 8 years.
Mm.
So let's use that as a positive, because we're actually starting to focus on finding something else.
Yeah.
And you discover something. You find a new supplier of A, B, or C. You try something new, you know, there's a new bag of flour from a new supplier. It's English wheat. It's organic. It's the same, but it's different. Mm-hmm. It's trying to spin it as a positive with them. And it's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's something new. We're pushing ourselves out of a rhythm. So, you know, I think I've kind of taken it as a positive in a sense, all these increases and obviously trying to open a new cafe as well at this moment in time, building costs have gone through the roof and all these things. So, you know what, you're going to lose the lampshade, you're going to lose the light at the front of the shop. We're going to lose the nice wood, and we're going to just put MDF down and we're going to sand the floor. We're not going to replace the floor. There's ways around things, right?
I guess, when are you planning on opening the new shop and whereabouts is it going to be?
So you were at the Botanics.
Yes.
Straight across the road from the Botanics.
Oh, so not that far away from...
No, yeah, it's okay. Literally down the road. I don't know if you saw a big church. There was a big church on the corner by the Botanics.
Okay, yeah.
Church on the cross. We're literally two doors up.
Okay.
Yeah, we're kind of sandwiched in between a post office and a shop called Hoos. So we're 497 Great Western Road in the bakery, and the new cafe is 717 Great Western.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. Oh, so still right in the same community. That's
right,
awesome.
Right down, same nice. Kind of environment, same catchment, same area. A lot of people for a lot of, you know, a long time have been saying, you're very lucky if you can get sat in the shop, or, you know, not lucky, but the seats go quite quickly. And there's been a need, I think, and a desire for some more seats and things. So we're going to try and not expand, but take what we do in the shop and put it into a cafe format, in a sense of very similar produce. But we can elaborate a little bit. And again, it's been a very difficult period for all of us, for all bakers, for everybody in life, in COVID coming out of it. Our attitudes have changed, and, you know, it's a good springboard for the team that we've got in place now to give them another challenge and kind of, give us something to look forward to, I think. Change it up a little bit without going too crazy. I did say I would never do a service again, and we're gonna do a service again, but maybe not me myself. I think with this opening as well, you know, I think you'll know yourself when you open a bakery, or a cafe or a restaurant, you get so entrenched in it, you kind of actually lose your focus at a point, because your focus is solely on this business, that your creativity sometimes drops, your input will drop, you just get into a rhythm. And for me now, it's a really exciting time in a sense, because I get to maybe start to think about what I want to do in the future. You know, I don't think there was one person on these podcasts I listened to today that hasn't got a wood-fired oven. I want a wood-fired oven, you know, but I've not had the time to build one. I don't have the premises for one. So maybe I might go and find myself one, you know.
There you go.
And get back to making bread again. You know, it's something that I struggle with at the moment, because after heart surgery, there's something they do within heart surgery where they tweak some kind of nerve that can lead to complications and things. But after heart surgery, after about a year of getting back to work, I noticed that I wasn't doing too great. And basically it turned out that I'm now allergic to wheat.
Oh, great.
Oh. So I really struggle now to work in the bakery, especially the production kitchen. As soon as the rye flour comes out or the strong flour comes out, the wheat's out, that's me, I'm done. You know, when the mixers are mixing and things, I have to leave the building. It's quite a bad allergy. Baker allergic to wheat. You couldn't write it, honestly. So I'm all masked up. I've got these super masks that I have to wear, but I've not had time to concentrate on bread. I've not had time to actually go back to basics and enjoy bread. You know, I think you can get lost in the business, and you get lost in the day-to-day service. You enjoy what you're doing. You're producing this great produce. But maybe actually in the future, for me, opening this cafe will give me the time to go back to basics and do a lot more research within flour and wheat and the production of bread and start baking again and maybe get a bit more creative. So it's exciting. It's exciting. It's a bit of a daunting task, but there's something at the end of it, hopefully.
Awesome. Oh, Yeah, well, I really wish you well, for sure. The bakery, the cafe, you personally, whatever, wherever this journey takes you, it's I really appreciate the talk. It's great to get to meet you and learn you know, a tiny bit about what you're up to. It's amazing stuff.
Well, likewise, it's discovering you and discovering this podcast. It's there's some stories on it, and it kind of just twinkle at the pull at the heartstrings as well. You know, it's I do shy away. I do keep myself to myself. I'm very I'm not sort of recluse, but I tend to concentrate on what I'm doing. So I have very little understanding of what's going on out there. So when I do find something like this, it's nice that there's plenty to listen to. So I will be going back to it. So it's been a pleasure listening to you as well. It really has. It's been there's some real stories out there, and it takes somebody like yourself to go out and put this together to do it. Because I did looked you up a little bit, and my partner Deb's on the internet trying to find you and look at the Orange Boot. Was it Orange Boot Bakery?
Yeah, Orange Boot Bakery. Yeah.
I did my research.
I'm bringing back all that stuff too, because the website doesn't exist anymore since we closed. But my little side project is, while we were open, I think I wrote 60 newsletters and 60 posts about life at the bakery and stuff. And I'm bringing all of that to a different site just to have the archives, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's enthusiastic. You know, you're extremely dedicated, and it's great. This industry needs people like you to put this out there and listen to us talk for an hour.
I appreciate that, because, you know, I think like when we had the shop in Saskatchewan, it was like, I think we had a very similar focus to what you have in Glasgow. And then I'm seeing that it repeats, you know, all over the world. And yet there were times at the bakery in Regina where I was pretty darn lonely. Like when things get bad, you figure like you're the only person that's had this problem, or that you got the weight of the world on your shoulders. And it's like, no, this is happening all over. We're figuring it out, and we're all doing our own thing. And you know, my shop can be completely different than yours, and yet we're on a very similar journey. And I just find that to be magical. Yeah.
But it takes somebody to do that. So
yeah,
well
thank
done you.
You.
Yeah. Well done you. It's it's nice, and I'm going to enjoy the rest of them, I'm sure.
All right. Oh my gosh, wasn't that awesome? What a great fella. I'm so grateful to have the talk, and you know, especially when he was talking towards the end there about like he's not on the internet and he's not, you know, he was barely responding to emails and stuff. He's just doing his thing in downtown Glasgow, in the West End, serving the people there. And that's how he's doing it. And I just think that's brilliant. You never know why or how you get into certain things and start doing certain projects. You know, he's an actual working chef till he's not anymore. He's a damn fine sandwich caterer until a volcano goes off, and now he's not doing that anymore. You know, he's a really good baker until he needs open heart surgery, and side effects are causing gluten allergies and stuff, and now he's got a team to bake. And it's like, you don't know what life's going to throw up at you, but you figure it out and you keep on going forward, and you keep on knowing what's important to you and holding on to what's important to you. And that's how good things happen. So couldn't be happier for Stefan and his team, and this idea of this new cafe that he's opening up that's probably open by now. We had the call a few weeks ago. You know, it's just really neat. And hey, the story about how he researched the location on the Great Western Road, and how he sat out there for a month watching traffic and putting it together and tying it to how much was being sold and saying like, there's something going on here, you know, something needs to change, and I think I can change it. Like, that shows some dedication too, right? Like, we fly into things so fast, or I'll speak for myself. I fly into things so fast and I fly off of them so fast. And it takes a certain amount of dedication to say, I am really going to understand what's going on this street corner before I buy in. And then when I do buy in, I'm jumping in with both feet. Like, good for him. Like that was just awesome. And then if you're Canadian and you're listening to this, or if you're a soccer fan and listen to this, I just have to mention it. And I'm sorry, maybe this isn't good, but I could listen to him again and again and again because of his accent. And like he had mentioned, it's a Midlands accent. And in my mind, if I close my eyes and I'm listening to Stefan talk, I'm listening to John Herdman talk. And John's the head coach of the Canadian men's national team for soccer. I don't know, maybe there's something in the water when you grow up, because it's not just the accent, it's the way that he talks about the journey that he's on and the thing that he's trying to build and the team that he's creating and the people that he's serving. It's so similar to what Herdman talks about with trying to build a team and build a program and connect with the fans that the soccer team's trying to connect with. It was a very special talk for me and a very moving talk for me. And I can't wait to get back to Glasgow to meet Stefan in person and see his new place, understand more about the old place, and see things even more through his eyes. I'm excited for that. Until next week, where we have another talk with another baker with a story, have a great week. Work hard, bake lots, keep making the good stuff. Happy baking. Bye-bye.